Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take complex source material and, well, we try to boil it down for you.
Make it make sense.
Exactly. Today, we're jumping into Section L of the Neighborhood Planning and Design Guide. It's all about stormwater management.
A topic that sounds dry, but the guide actually reframes it pretty radically.
It really does. Our mission is to unpack that framework quickly and maybe highlight some surprising angles. The biggest one right off the bat, stormwater isn't just runoff.
No, it's not waste to get rid of. That's the absolute core idea from L1. It must be seen as a resource.
A resource? How does that work in practice?
Well, it means thinking about how it fits into the whole settlement water cycle. Think about nature for a second.
Okay.
In a natural system, something like 85, maybe 90% of rainfall doesn't just run off. It goes back up through evapotranspiration. It feeds plants, cools the air.
Right, it cycles. Our pipes just shoot it away.
Precisely. So the modern approach is about designing systems that act more like that natural cycle.
Okay, so if water is a resource now, what are the main goals when designing these new systems? What are we trying to achieve?
The guide lays out several key objectives. Minimizing flood risk is still crucial, obviously.
Sure, if that makes sense.
But it's broader now. We also need to protect the water bodies it eventually flows into, you know, the rivers and wetlands, and protect biodiversity there.
Okay, environment focused.
And, this is interesting, promote multifunctional use. Basically, amenity. The drainage system should ideally be something people can enjoy.
Amenity, like turning drainage channels into parks, or just maybe less ugly concrete.
Ideally closer to parks. It leads straight into this big conceptual shift called water-sensitive urban design, or WSD, sometimes called WSUD elsewhere.
Water-sensitive design. What's the core principle?
It's about treating water, well, sensitively, mimicking that natural water cycle we talked about, using the landscape itself.
So less about hidden pipes, more about working with the water on the surface.
Exactly. And the practical tools for doing that, that's what sustainable drainage systems, or SETES, are all about.
SETES. I've heard that term. So that's the how.
That's the how. The whole toolkit. Instead of just pipes and culverts, SETES uses a network of techniques. Things like rainwater harvesting on site.
Like water tanks.
Yep. Or green roofs that soak up rain right where it lands. Permeable pavements are another big one, letting water seep into the ground instead of rushing off.
Okay, so keeping water local, slowing it down.
Slowing it down, cleaning it up. Detention ponds, swales. These features hold water temporarily, let pollutants settle out, and can even become habitats. It controls the velocity and improves water quality.
It sounds much more integrated, but planning this must be complex. It can't be the same everywhere.
Absolutely not. The planning framework digs into the specifics. You have to look at the proposed development itself, land use, how many people will live there.
Makes sense.
And you really have to look at the existing environment, the geology, the soils, the topography.
Can you give an example of where the environment really dictates the approach?
A critical one mentioned is dealing with dolomitic land.
Dolomitic land? Why is that singled out?
Because dolomite is a type of rock that can dissolve in water. Mm-hmm. If you build standard drainage that concentrates water and forces it into the ground in these areas.
Uh-oh, dissolving the ground underneath.
Exactly. You risk creating voids, sinkholes, huge instability issues. Mm. So the guide says you need special, often costly precautions on dolomitic land to avoid concentrating that flow. It changes the whole design.
Wow. Okay. So you've got these site-specific issues, but you also need to handle different scales of rain, right? From a regular shower to a massive storm.
Yes. And that's where the dual drainage system comes in. It's sort of the backbone of the physical solution.
Dual system. Two sets of pipes.
Not exactly pipes always. It's two systems working together. First, there's the minor system. This handles the common, frequent rain events.
The ones that happen pretty often.
Right. Typically storms with a recurrence interval, an RI of maybe 2 to 10 years. A 1 in 10 year storm has a 10% chance any given year. This system is mainly about convenience, stopping puddles, keeping roads clear day to day.
Okay, the everyday system. What's the other part?
That's the major system. This one is designed for the big, rare floods, think a 100-year RI storm. And crucially, it often uses overland routes.
Overland? Like what?
Roads, parks, sports, fields, open spaces. They're designed to intentionally carry that excess water during a major flood.
So the road becomes a temporary channel?
Effectively, yes. The priority here shifts completely. It's not about convenience anymore. It's about public safety and protecting buildings and property from major damage.
which leads to this ultimate design goal they mention.
The don't do damage criterion, or D3. Basically, making sure that even in very extreme events, say, bigger than a 20-year storm, maybe up to the absolute maximum predicted flood, you don't get catastrophic damage or loss of life.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. We started seeing stormwater as a resource.
Yeah, move through sensitive design and said yes.
Landed on this dual system that uses our public spaces differently in emergencies. What's the big takeaway for you, the listener?
I think it's realizing that modern stormwater management isn't just one thing. It's a whole system. It runs from a green roof on a single building.
Right up to regional planning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And includes using roads and parks as part of the essential infrastructure during floods. It's visible. It's integrated.
And that connects to a really interesting final thought, doesn't it? This dual system implies a trade-off.
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
It fundamentally accepts that during a major flood, some level of disruption, like closing a road that's acting as a channel, is acceptable, that inconvenience is tolerable.
But severe property damage and critically risk to life,
those are not tolerable. So it really forces us to think about what we prioritize. Are we willing to accept some short-term inconvenience, maybe see more visible water management features in our landscape?
If it means better protection of resources, property, and ultimately people's lives in those extreme events.
That's the question it leaves us with. It requires a shift in how we view and use our public spaces.
A really provocative point to end on. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.